Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I want to welcome back Dave Perlman. He was on the show a while ago, and we had all this. He makes these great microphones, but we're not going to talk about his great microphones tonight. We're going to talk about his playing pedal steel. And he's played with a lot of interesting people over the years, and he's just got a great sound, and we're going to go in depth into pedal steel and his setup and his tone. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
And before we get into it, I'm going to play a clip that he sent me this morning, which just blew me away. It's a clip of him with Dan Fogelberg in the band. They were the band Fool's Gold, if I'm correct.
Yep.
And it's called Part of the Plan. And this was it said on the clip it was 1976.
Yeah, it was a little while ago.
So I'm going to play the clip. This is where he does his lead in the song. And then we're going to talk about what he was using and stuff, because we also have his setup in here live. We're going to be having him demonstrate live, but I'm curious of how his system has changed over the years. So let me play this clip real quick. This is Part of the Plan. Very cool. So what were you using back then? Can you remember? Now it's a test. But
oh, there were a lot of good drugs back then we were using. A whole lot of good stuff. Actually, gear-wise, it was my second pedal steel. It was an old Bird's Eye Maple Showbud from the late 60s, and I was going straight into an original old 67 drip edge Fender Twin that I actually still own. That guitar is long gone. I still have the amp. And
you said drip edge?
Yeah, the 68 Fender Twin. They did it in 67 and 68. Late 67 and 68, they had an aluminum
little border around
the speaker, right?
Ah, okay. I didn't know. I never heard that term for it.
Yeah, drip edge, they call it.
I have a bassman that has that on.
Right. Yeah. They did it for like a year and a half or something ridiculous like that.
But that was a great sounding amp.
It was a great sounding amp. I actually have two of them left.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
And another twin too. I have three of them.
So what now, you're using an ETS now?
This is an ETS steel, and the reason I bought this, I've been doing you know, a lot of traveling and a lot with the a lot of the requirements for airplane travel now. So my Shobud, which was solid wood in a flight case, was way overweight and over, you know, the dimensions were too big. Mm-hmm. And they always charged us extra. You know, the management companies had to pay extra and everybody complained. This guitar I had made for me, it's aluminum. And in a custom-made flight flight case, it's under 50 pounds. So they actually just charge it as a piece of luggage. I don't get charged for overweight or oversize.
Now, do you hear a difference between the aluminum and the wood?
You know, that's a tough question. You know, it's one of those things where if you actually played them side by side and, you know, changed some of your amp settings, you'd go, yeah, okay, I hear a little difference. The guitars themselves feel differently. They play differently. The action is different. So there are things like that are different. But, you know, I'll sit down and I'll tweak the amp so it sounds like what I want the guitar to sound like.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really make too much difference to me when I'm playing.
Okay. So a lot of it's the way you set it. The amp has a lot to do with
right.
it, too.
Right. I mean, a lot of there are, you know, you can't say that certain guitars don't have certain sounds. They do. But, you know, I, to me, how important is that? I'm, you know,
mm-hmm.
you okay. know, playing well, no, an ensemble, yeah. nobody's really going to hear the difference.
That's true. And then right. also too live. Now, you use this one for recording or do you use another one?
Well, I've actually, just because, you know, I'm getting older now and just picking stuff up is something I don't want to do. And this guitar is so much lighter than the other guitar that I'm actually using it pretty much most of the time now where the weight becomes the consideration.
No, I hear you. I hear you. Yeah. I want a 50-watt head at the amp show.
Right.
And right. I love it. I wish I won it like about 30 years ago because it was a lot.
Well,
it's a heavy amp.
As an example, you can see the amp I brought for tonight. It's a Fishman Loudbox 100, and it's this little teeny amp, and it sounds so good. And I am taking this now to sessions when I do sessions. Mm-hmm. I just bring this.
It has what, a single, like a 6-inch?
Something crazy like that. And a tweeter.
I have a Fishman, too. It's brown, though. Brown.
Yeah, this is an older one.
Yeah.
And we're running it direct. So right. go ahead and just play a little bit of the guitar so they hear what you're doing, what it sounds like. Direct. I'm running that direct into the board from the amp. But
right.
the little guy has plenty of power. Because we're in the studio and we have another show going on, it's easier to do it direct, but it sounds really clean.
It's actually it's pretty quiet, yeah.
So, and what pickup is on there? Is that a...
It's a George L.
E66,
they call it.
George L. E66.
Right.
And this is a 10-string. Now...
Right.
Let me ask you, you have four pedals.
Four floor pedals.
And how many levers?
Five knee levers. Right.
Four pedals and five levers. Now, I was asking you before the show.
Right.
How did you decide? Because I know the pedal steel is completely adjustable. You can assign each lever or pedal
right.
to any string. What do you take into account as a person that doesn't first of all, give us the tuning.
Okay, so yeah, you know, the tuning is actually pretty standard. You're not going to get too much difference in tuning from most steel players are using the exact same tuning. It's called an E9th chromatic tuning, and it's essentially built around an E chord. An open E chord,
mm-hmm.
but in there you also have a flat seventh, a second, a major seventh, and a ninth.
That's a cool chord just in itself.
Just by itself is a pretty cool chord, yeah. And that's a pretty stock tuning. You're not going to find pedal steel players who are using a different tuning than that.
So that's the main one.
That's a pretty standard tuning. And then where it gets cuckoo is the knee levers and the foot pedals. You know, in the 50s and 60s when guys were really getting this all together, people were experimenting. There's the Jimmy Day tuning, there's the Evans tuning, there's Shobud tuning, there's you know, with the pedals. And some people have pedals up with the E chord, pedals down with the E chord. I have a pretty stock Showbud setup. Except for the fact that I have a zero pedal, that so they usually have an ABC or a 1-2-3 pedal that are pretty stock. This is a pretty stock setup.
So do yours go up or go down?
Well, the pedals go down. I'm talking about the tuning, how it goes okay. up and down. So my A pedal raises my Bs to C sharp, and my B pedals raise the G sharps to A. So that combination, you get your E to A chord.
But you're hitting two pedals at the same time.
Right, so I'm hitting my...
So the one pedal is, it hits, it's actually adjusting more than one string.
Right, it's doing both B strings to C sharp.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that. Okay.
And both G sharps to A.
Okay, that's cool.
So pretty simple. But one of the things I've added is the zero pedal, which a lot of guys don't do, or they have it on some other pedal, where I lower my G sharps down to G. So instead of having a major chord across, I have an E minor chord. And then with the seventh on the bottom and the second... And if I hit the B to C sharp pedal, mm-hmm. I get a minor sixth. So there's different combinations.
And then what's the... Now, that was the first pedal that I'm seeing.
First two, right, together.
And then what's the last one?
So the last pedal is the one that confuses a lot of people because it raises the E's and the B's, the top E and the top B each a whole step at the same time. And then the combination between that and the pedal raising the G sharps to A give you the F sharp minor, the two chord.
It's interesting how you do two. I was watching you warm up, and you go from one pedal, then you'll hit two at the same time. And
right. And also, I can do combinations of knee levers at the same
That's
time
right.
as well.
You still have the knee levers.
Right.
Okay, so now, how are they set?
Well, the Showbud setup, what I was talking about, like, so my left knee going left raises the E's a half step to F. And my left knee going right lowers the E's a half step to D sharp.
Oh, so one goes up, one goes down.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then my left knee left lowers my D sharp to D and then to C sharp. There's a stop.
Oh, wow. Now, do you feel that, or you just know by...
No, there's a stop there.
It's like a clutch.
Yeah, okay. Right. And then my right knee going right lowers the B's to A sharp. Sometimes.
Wow. So how did you figure
that out?
It's a lot
of tune. Well, again, most of this is pretty stock. And then, you know, I started playing, you know, around 67, 68, and there weren't a whole lot of guys around to give you a lot of information. You know, there were a few things like Guitar Player magazine in the late 60s had a pedal steel column, and, you know, there were a few teachers in town, but you really had to just listen and make stuff up as you were going along. So that's why my setup is a little bit cuckoo. So that's why it's hard for pedal steel players to sit in on other guys' pedal steels, because a lot of times the pedals are different.
Yeah, they're set up right. Totally different.
So, and then I have another knee lever that goes up that raises my F sharps to G. I wish we should tune this one a little bit.
Now, while you're doing that, we were talking about the show, before the show, pedal steels, you have to temper the tuning. And I know that if you, if you've ever looked at some of the tuners that are out there, like the Peterson, they have pedal steel tunings that are tempered.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about that while you're tuning. How do you approach the tempering? What do you try to do? Do you try to narrow the octaves, or because I'm thinking of tempering in terms of like a piano, where they
it's very similar. I just do it by ear most of the time. And now, of course, like you have the Peterson, where you can actually set up your own tempered tuning, or use the ones that they supply. I like to use my own. It's the same thing like when you're tuning a piano. If you mm-hmm. tuned every note to 440, it would just sound horrible.
Right.
It's the same thing with the pedal steel, and same thing like if you're doing a guitar, you always have to worry about your thirds, mm-hmm. you know, like your G sharp and then mm-hmm. your C sharp on the A chord and stuff. It's the same thing with the pedal steel. So I tune my E's and my B strings to 440. I tune my D to 440. And the G's go to 440, and then everything else is around, 438, 437 and a half.
Oh, wow.
So, right. Wow. And then you have to do the same thing we were talking about, the enharmonic equivalents, that kind of, you get into that kind of thing. And then the difference in tempering between, like, a G sharp and an A flat.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in playing a different scale, those two notes, even though they should be the same, are not the same notes.
Now, what happens when, I've heard about this before, when you're playing with a person, well, you're in a session and they're using acoustic piano, or you're playing live or a session where they're using a digital piano, because I heard that can be tricky, trying to get the pedal steel to tune up to it.
Well, not so much. It depends on when you're using a digital piano. It depends on the age of the digital piano. The older ones, they used to only sample like an octave and then stretch that octave out. The newer pianos, they got hip to where they had to actually sample every note, so the pianos are a lot more in tune.
Mm-hmm.
The older piano samples, I would find that wouldn't be in tune. But then you just compensate with the bar, and you can always
you're always by ear, you're adjusting.
Right.
So it's not if they're a little bit flat, you'll just compensate for that.
Right. And then especially on a live gig too, like we've been dealing with the door opening and closing, the strings stretch and tighten as the temperature and humidity change, so I'm always dealing with that as well. But
mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of times, especially like if I'm doing a session, I actually will play to the bass player, because most of the times I go in as an overdub player and I know the bass isn't going to change, because they usually record sections with drums, bass, and guitar. A lot of times pianos are done as overdubs anyway.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, well, I'm not saying that's a rule, mm-hmm. But a lot of times what I'll play to, I ask them to, when people send me tracks, I say, turn the bass up a little bit. That's what I tune to.
Oh, okay. So that gives you your reference there.
Pretty much, yeah.
Now, are there any pedal steels that actually have a compensated bridge, or have you ever seen one?
Well, they don't have compensated bridges. They do have what are called compensators. It's slightly different than what you're talking about. Because there's a thing called cabinet drop on a lot of pedal steels. There's a lot of tension, so when you hit the pedals, some of the strings will go flat. So you have to compensate for that while you're tuning and playing as well.
Oh.
And there are guitars that actually have strengtheners inside the cabinets so that the cabinet doesn't pull in. They also have other parts underneath the guitar that are used to sharpen a string that would go flat,
mm-hmm.
and it starts to get a little complicated.
Well, do you notice that problem with the aluminum? Or I would see that with the wood.
It's interesting that I still get it a little bit with the aluminum body, yeah. So, like, I can look on the tuner and tune my E string, and it's absolutely perfect on the Peterson.
Okay.
And if I hit the pedals, that don't not even affecting that string. It's going a little under. So it's just like when you're if you have a floating bridge on a Stratocaster and you bend your B string, some of the other strings are going to go flat a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's pulling the tension on the guitar, and it tends to do that a little bit.
Now, on this guitar, what material is the nut and the bridge on that? Is that stainless steel, or is that...
Yeah, this is going to be steel. And okay. I think these are aluminum rollers.
Aluminum rollers, okay. Yeah. Now, what was the setup on the one that you played on the Fogelberg cut? What was that? Was that the that tuning that you were talking? The same tuning?
It was very, very similar to this, except I didn't have the zero pedal lowering my G sharps, and I didn't have the pedal raising my F sharps to G. But other than that, it was pretty much the same guitar.
Oh, wow.
Same setup. And I have three steels now, three guitars that are set up just like this.
And you, all ETS, or what else are you?
No, the other ones are the old wood show buds that I've kept. And I keep them for session work at the shop, and
so. But there's not. I don't think you can't
local gigs.
Well, yeah, you know what? It's like right now, and I'm sure you've heard this a lot before. You know, a lot of times people email you sessions, and so I get tracks sent over email, and I actually have two different setups at my home and at my office where I can do pedal steel sessions, and I have the exact same setup on the guitar and the same setup on the computer, so I don't have to move the gear at all.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's a good way to. Yeah. Right. Well, so that was your setup on the show. But is that the new show buds that you have? The other two, is it the same thing? Do you have the same amount of pedals?
Almost, yeah. And again, I wouldn't call them new. One of them's from 1976.
Oh, okay. And, so that's the same year.
And actually, the other one, I think, is probably about a 77 or 78.
Okay.
So
you, for the session work, you use those more, or do you?
This one I keep at home, and I have one of the old wood show buds set up at the office.
At the office. So yeah. So you use both.
Right.
This thing's great because it's really kind of small.
Right, it's a little compact, it's a little shorter scale, and it's extremely light, 47 pounds in the flight case.
That's amazing.
So
this is a single neck. Have you ever used a double?
Well, as a matter of fact, I used to have an old Emmons from the mid-70s, the push-pull it was called. It was a different design of guitar, a little complicated to get into the workings of it. But it was a double neck Emmons push pull, and it was a wonderful sounding guitar too. I mean, you really can hear the difference of the sound of certain guitars. This guitar was really a beautiful sounding guitar, but again, it was like, you know, going and doing jobs around town. Having the extra neck, it was more of a, you know, a jazz oriented neck, but the guitar was so heavy that it just, you know, well, lifting it up and putting it in the car.
With the two necks, you had the E9th.
And then you had a C6 neck.
Okay.
So it was a sixth neck, more of a jazzy sounding thing, you know. That kind of.
So you can get the C6 type of setup, what you just did?
Or
you
yes just, and no. I mean, there were, you know, much, so the strings were much of lower voicings and, you know, a little more complicated.
But it's not as common
structure.
Now, or was when?
Well, no, a lot of guys still play it, but you know, when you're trying to play it on a country gig, some people call it the 2 weeks notice neck. So, because you want to play, you know, the jazzy stuff, and they're going,
the chords and the little swells.
Right. So you're playing the 2 weeks notice neck. All right.
But so it's not as popular now, or is it?
You know, it is. A lot of guys now are also playing 12 strings, which I never got into, which are kind of like combinations of the two necks in a way. And guys also have pedals that drop the tunings and things like that.
So they can adjust one.
Right, and I just, you know, I'm not smart enough for that. That's too much trouble. I've been playing like this way since, you know, this way since 1967, and I thought, you know what, I'm good.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your technique a little bit in playing. I'm going to play a clip I think it's I'm going to run Ride Into the Sunset. Now, there's a, the singer is Gary Stockdale.
Right, I think this is the Gary Stockdale.
Anyway, so he's singing the song, and you're playing in and around him. So I want I want you guys to listen to what he's doing behind him, and then let's go a little bit into what you're doing and how you're phrasing and stuff. Because that, to me, is the thing that impresses me most with a lot of the pedal steel players that I listened to and heard, is they just they know where to put little great little things in spots, and it's... It's 100% taste, and you'll see it here. This is Ride Into the Sunset.
No need for commendations, my virtues to extol, when I'm puffing out on the 19th hole. I'm gonna ride into the sunset. No more dues to pay. Ride into the sunset, gonna ride on away. I'm going far beyond the horizon. No one disagrees, and no one ever has to get down on their knees. The best he can, and when I go my way, that's what they say about me. That'd be all right. That'd be all right. Gonna wanna ride into the sunset without a care in my mind. Hoping that I'd left something good behind. When I'm far beyond the horizon, when my job is done, I'll ride into the sunset, gonna ride till dawn.
Great tone.
Wow, just thank you.
Taste. I mean, 100% taste. But let me ask you now. There's a couple of things that were interesting. You're doing little fills and like swells. You're functioning like you're doing pads in some of the areas back there. And but then there's that line with the piano, and you're following the piano.
Right.
Now, as a session, most of the, I would assume a lot of the stuff that you were doing is they basically just want you to, you know, get that sound.
Right.
But how, did they, in this session, did they write out that line, or did you just do
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, they wanted me to follow the piano line, so yeah.
Okay.
So I had to do that. A lot, of, but some of this stuff was, you know, my own on that particular song, but there are some pretty specific parts they wanted me to play.
Oh, okay. Was on the mandolin, was it Grant?
What's that?
Who was on the mandolin?
Actually, I have no idea. Oh, really? I was an overdub.
It was okay. An overdub.
I never see anybody.
Because Grant Geisman was on the show.
Oh, yeah, Grant. Too, so. Might have been.
He plays
well, it was Greg Prestipino that was
yeah.
producing, oh, yeah. So probably, yeah. And it's funny that the tone, you mentioned the tone. And again, we're going back to, you know, the different guitars and different amps and different settings and stuff. And I actually love the tone that we got on that particular song, and that was direct. There's a company called A Designs out of Woodland Hills, Pete Montesi, a great friend, and he makes a direct box that has a tube in it. It's a tube direct box mm-hmm. called the Ready. It's mm-hmm. a big red yeah. brick, and it's like a red DI, they call it the Ready.
Yeah.
And that's, I just go direct into that, and I'm going, everything was in the box. We recorded into Pro Tools. We used Bomb Factory compressor.
And so you did compress it at the
right going in. I compress a little bit going in. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I would presume live you don't need it as much.
No, not so much.
But because it's just smooth.
Right.
But I like the way you were doing some interesting things. You hit like a, it was like a harmonic and you slide up.
Right.
And there he goes. Yeah. And then you there. Then but what I like is the way you change. There's the timbre between some of the different strings. You do some of the lines. You'll start out on the top, and it sounds like you're going to one of the wound strings, but it's a nice, rich,
right.
throaty type of sound. So how it, when you were doing the session, was that one of those ones where they sent it to you and you just did it yourself?
Well, actually, no. They came in to the shop.
Oh, wow.
And the three of us actually collaborated on a lot of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But they were telling you, I want this kind of thing, or I want that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you get
much.
A lot of... Do you find that more now, that they're people are more specific what they want, especially like if you're doing a maybe a TV-type date or a score?
Well, yeah, if I'm doing a score or a television date, yeah, people are pretty specific about what they want. But most of the sessions I do, I get songs sent to me from all over the world. You know, they send me MP3s or waves. And what I'll do is I'll record like three or four tracks, and I'll send them back, email them back, and they do either wire transfers or PayPal. Mm-hmm. And I don't even go to studios anymore, very rarely.
Wow. It's a shame because your mics are so great, you know.
Well,
you're dying, you know, that those twins that you have, you know, with one of the Perlman mics, it's like to die for,
right.
And you got to go direct. It's like... Though I understand, I get it, but I mean, it's like, it's a shame because you make these great mics at the same time.
Well, and again, like I was saying, now it's like the twins are so heavy, I usually even just bring this little Fishman, but I've been playing out of a Deluxe, too, recently.
Oh, wow.
We had I bought one of the 65 reissued Deluxes, and I had Steve Deacon over at Rock and Roll Doctor completely rebuilt it, and we have all Mercury Magnetics transformers everywhere, and the Alnico speakers, and the...
Speaking of speakers, nice. What do you have in the twins? Did you use JBLs?
One of the twins I had a 15-inch Gauss in it.
Oh, wow.
Really, really nice speaker. And then the other twins were stock blueback Jensens.
Mm-hmm.
That sound great. They're just wonderful speakers.
Was that what you – were the Jensens what you used on the Fogelberg?
I think the Fogelberg on the first – I don't remember. I'd have to see the pictures. But I believe it's the Gauss.
Oh,
that's
wow.
In that.
I remember the Gausses were great speakers.
Right.
I don't think they make them anymore, if I'm correct.
I don't think so.
But they had a nice full sound. They were a little different than...
Right.
But the... and then in your Deluxe, that's just a blueback on there?
Right.
Just a blueback.
Right.
Okay. Have you experimented with other speakers, or did you...
You know, I've used the Celestians and, you know, other types of speakers, but you know, when I took the amp in, I said, you know, while we're doing it, let's just make it as vintage as possible. It's the reissue, but go ahead and put what you think should be in there. We changed out a lot of the capacitors inside, and again, like we did all the Mercury Magnetics, we put in the original Alnico Fenders, and it's a pretty good sounding little amplifier.
Well, let me ask you this: using a 12-inch as opposed to a 15-inch.
Well, those are two speakers in the Deluxe.
Oh,
but in the Twin, you're talking about the 212s in the Twin.
You have 212s in one of them, and you have a 15, right?
Right. The 15 is going to be a lot fatter sounding. Its panel's a lot more low end.
Do you prefer that, or it doesn't really matter?
You know, again, it's too heavy to pick up.
No, that's... Well, yeah, but I mean, now they have the Neomag ones in there.
Right. And I'm also using a PV, little PV Nashville 112, they call it, which was built for pedal steel, so it's actually... voiced for pedal steel, and it's a pretty good sounding amp. Doesn't have as much low end as I'd like. It actually doesn't even have as much low end as the Deluxe, but
really,
if I'm going to be playing like going on like a country gig where they really want pedal steel, I'll bring the twins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, because they really want this sound.
Now, do you use them together, or do you?
You know, mainly just one at a time. But if you know, if it's a big gig in a big place, I might bring two.
Okay.
Right.
Now, who were your influences? What did you listen to when you started to learn steel?
Well, you know, there wasn't a whole lot. Like I said, you know, country radio in Los Angeles, there was KLAC 570, and we would listen to that a lot. And the Palomino Club was real big at the time. And I remember I used to sneak in because I was underage, and I would see Red Rhodes, who became a really, you know, good friend of mine. Great player.
Mm-hmm.
But mainly at the time, Janie Manis was the pedal steel player in town. And I used to sneak in and sit in the back of the club and hide so I could watch him play. And he's one of everybody's favorite. He's such a great pedal steel player and a great guy. But he always, and he had a different technique too. His right hand technique was really quite a bit different than a lot of the Nashville guys. So
in,
he used a different,
in what way?
Just in the way he held his hand. He held his right hand a little bit flatter, and did his blocking. So you would block with your palm. And actually, as I get older, I'm getting a little arthritic in my joints. But I'm actually going towards more of the Nashville thing where my hand is curved up a little bit more than JD.
So what he's saying is like a lot of banjo players, they kind of anchor with their pinky?
Right. So that the Nashville thing is more of a banjo.
Which one's better for the real fast stuff?
You know what? It's what you get used to.
Oh, okay.
JD is a monster player, and it's just like none of us will ever be able to play like that.
We had him on the flow guitar, and he played on Sweetheart of the Rodeo.
Yes, he did.
And that's a great sound. It's just, and he used a twin.
Yeah.
He used a twin like you do. So it was amazing. He got I love that. Great album. Great album. But some of the other people that you played with, what was like the most unusual thing for you to play steel on in terms of whether it was live or in the studio? Because I know sometimes, like we were talking earlier, Alan Parsons, he used a steel player, but he had him do stuff that wasn't typical.
Oh, I've done weird stuff. I did a record with Vicki Lawrence in the 70s, and they wanted me to sound like a rocket ship taking off. So, you know, we had a pedal board, and I had a chorus and a flanger and a distortion pedal and everything. We just turned everything on. And I just and just did this for, you know, a few minutes.
Did you find
it's a great check?
But if you use effects, if I'm correct, if it was a union gig, you get double.
It was a great check.
Now, speaking of effects, I mean, I remember the song Take It Easy, Jackson Browne did that. And I don't know who played pedal steel on there, but he phased it. It was a really cool sound.
I think it was Sneaky Pete.
Sneaky Pete?
Playing on that.
But did you, do you use effects? I mean, unless they ask for it, are you like,
I actually
are you
do. I do like to make the guitar sound different, because I don't want to just get pegged as a country player. I do play a lot of rock and roll and stuff. I like with John Pratt, we were just talking about, and the stuff I'm playing with him is pretty rock and it's rock and roll slide playing. And I use I like to have the breakup sound. I mean, instead of using a standard distortion pedal, I use the 59 Bassman Fender pedal and crank that up.
Oh, very cool. Yeah.
Yeah, you're familiar with that one.
Yeah.
It's a great sounding pedal, and the pedal steel has more of an output than a regular guitar too. So it's slamming the pedal, and then the pedal slams the amp, and it just sounds really great.
It gets a nice disc clip to it.
And I like the old Boss digital delay. I don't remember the number of the thing.
The analog, the tape one, or a box.
It was a white and blue.
Oh, it must have been. Okay, it was the Bucket Parade. It was analog, right? Not the digital.
No, it's a digital delay, but it's a little pedal with four knobs on it. I don't remember what number it's called. It's a really nice echo. And I use that, and I use a little bit of chorus. I have one of the blue Boss choruses, and I got a bunch of stuff.
Did you ever, I'm spacing on his name from Poco.
Rusty Young.
Did you ever use a Leslie?
I actually do. I have a stereo Leslie setup at the shop,
cool.
Which is really amazing. But again, it's just too much to bring to a gig. But if we're recording at the shop, I do have a stereo Leslie setup, which is
pretty
amazing.
All those people that are thinking about hiring him, ask for the Leslie. It's a great sound.
Now, I also have the new, there's a new pedal Electro Harmonix makes, I believe, that is a, is they call it a B4 or something.
Yeah.
The great pedal. And it actually sounds like, it really sounds like an organ. So I use that on this quite a bit.
But they also, just so you, for your information, the Electro Harmonix came out with a new Leslie pedal.
Right.
And it has the grit. It distorts like the old cabinet.
See, now I got to buy that.
This happens on every show.
Yes, right. Yes. So yeah, no. I mean, I was. I was impressed. I mean,
actually, the one I just got to, they have one that's a mellotron pedal.
Yes, I have
amazing.
That.
Amazing,
great.
And on this, the flute thing and the string thing on the pedal steel is amazing.
And he can bend. He can right. bend as he glissandos up. I mean, you can't do that on any
right.
Mellotron.
The mellotron pedal is very cool.
Yes, yes. Actually, I saw a video of pedal steel using a gizmotron on a
Oh, right.
Very
Remember
interesting.
Gizmotron. Are they back?
Yeah, there's a new company that came. But, I mean,
wow.
It uses so those that you don't know what it is, it uses little tone wheels and was originally developed by the guy from 10cc, right. And it does, like, bowing effects on
right.
the guitar. It sounds like a mellotron, but you can get those, like, articulations.
I thought there was a bass player named Leon Gare that I used to play with, and we were in a band together in 1980, and he had the gizmotron on his bass.
It was
amazing.
No, they're great. But I was shocked to see it on a pedal steel. It was
just, oh, well, I've never seen that.
First of all, that many strings. I've never seen one that wide.
Wow, that's crazy. That's yeah. right. Yeah, because the bass one was just, you know, four strings and just...
Yeah, it was really weird. But that the same sound. You have to bring the mellotron pedal in next time.
Should have thought about it. I didn't. I thought, you know what? I'm not going to bring any pedals. I'm just going to bring the little.
I got to hear the mellotron on pedal, especially with the pedal. Right. You know, using the levers and the pedals.
Well, Lori's heard my pedal board.
Yes.
That is so cool.
Yes.
That is very, very cool. Well, I'm going to play another clip real quick. It's part of because I'm going to close with a clip from The Wind Will Rise, but I want to play another clip of it I want to ask you a little bit about what you were doing tone-wise on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is Gary Stockdale. So let me play this clip real quick. Ask you is kind of get into your approach to playing because you can maybe demonstrate this now the upper strings they have like they're a very bright cutting sound and then you have your lower strings have that full sound but I think what you were doing there you were using the lower strings higher up right
I was doing a little of that yes
okay because yeah. it's an interesting. You get that. I don't know how to describe what that tone is.
Well, it's the like, same thing with guitar. You know, you're going to get a different tone out of a wound string than a plain string. It's just a little bit of a different tone.
Mm-hmm.
A little grittier.
Now, on that track, were you? Did they tell you specifically what you wanted? Because that's a little jazzier than.
Well, on that particular song, again, there were certain parts that needed to be played, but other than that, you know, some of the slides and the other things where I was just, you know, like, how about this? Let's play this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I mean, it was there. It really works, and it's a little different, even though you're playing. Some traditional style
right.
type of licks in the context of the song, it doesn't appear that way because it's kind of swinging a little bit.
Yeah.
The song's kind of moving along, and you're doing, and then that little opening note where you're just building up on that that progression's building.
Right,
I think that's really cool because it's subtle. You're just behind them, but you're there. You know what I mean? And sometimes you're playing, it's noticeable. You're doing a riff that's answering what he's saying, but then you're doing some stuff that if it wasn't there, you'd know it. But it's kind of
right.
so you know,
right? Yeah. So. But again, on that song, there were particular parts, very specific things that they did need,
mm-hmm.
and we worked pretty hard on both of these songs.
Well, it's obvious that the sound is Neil, and that was direct, right?
That was also through the Ready, the A Designs Ready.
It's just a great sound. I mean, I'm just blown away.
It's an amazing piece of gear.
I mean, it's just incredible that I mean, a lot of the players, we had JD on before, and he was using an amp, and part of it is the sound of that amp.
Oh, of course. Pushing it. Absolutely.
But you're getting that sustain, and you're getting that, it's not distorting as much, but that fullness.
Well, there's a warmth. You know, most guitars going direct, you know, as a regular guitar player, you put any kind of electric guitar through a direct box, it's just sterile and cold, and it just doesn't sound good at all. And this Ready Direct with the tube in it, and it's got an adjustable gain control and stuff. You can really do a lot of stuff with it.
Do you use it sometimes? Do you overdrive it a little bit to give it?
Yeah, you know, sometimes.
Sometimes?
Yeah.
Now, let's go back to what using an amp. Now, what I want to ask you as an engineer is how do you mic a pedal steel?
Just like any other guitar.
Look at it that
way. Yeah. Right.
The range of it, the depth of it, if it doesn't matter. I mean, true, a Perlman mic can handle the frequency, but I'm...
Well, really, any microphone that you're going to use on an electric guitar amplifier would be great. I mean, I've seen guys use SM57s. I've seen them use 421s, mm-hmm. U87s, my mics, whatever. Mm-hmm. People use... all kinds of things.
Now, with you playing live, and like for example, you were saying you use the Fishman a lot. You run direct out to the PA, or do you just crank the amp and just?
It depends on the size of the place. Like a lot of the stuff we do is mic'd, mm-hmm. so you know. And I just a lot of times I'll just have the amp right in front of me, and I use it as a monitor, and I let them mic it or take the direct out.
Oh, okay.
Because we're really playing a little bit more quietly on stage than we used to, you know, in the 60s and 70s, everybody had giant amps and Marshall stacks, and we're actually playing a little more quietly now. And of course, nobody wants to carry this stuff.
I think that has more of the influence than anything else. But did you ever use a Marshall on a...
I actually did. I used to play through a stack of Marshalls with this was in the early 70s. But before they had digital stuff, I still have my original Echoplex tape unit, and we used to I would play this as like, you know, Johnny Winter type rock and roll slide stuff.
Oh,
and
wow.
I played through a Marshall stack with an Echoplex.
Oh wow.
And cranked. That thing was awesome.
No, there's...
'Cause you get the... You can play rock and roll stuff on the guitar, and you know, through the Marshall with stuff. People are like, "Well, what the heck is that?"
No, I mean, you can. You know, people don't realize there's a lot of things that you can do under that a regular guitar player can't do. And some of those slides are just killer. I mean, even now, without all the distortion, it still sounds really cool.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, but if you can imagine that with
fully
a little
blown out.
Echoplex
and
a Marshall stack, you're like, oh, yeah, you're nailing it. But my favorite stuff is still that, you know. You know, that kind of swingy stuff, it's real fun to play.
It looks fun. Watching him play, he's smiling and he's like going to town, and it's like, it's great. Well, we're out of time. We're almost out of time. It's almost time to go, but I want to thank you again for bringing us down. This is great.
Oh,
it was
absolutely
a learning experience, and I always wanted to ask somebody, what made you decide to have the pedal do this or do that? So you answered my questions there.
Yeah, like I said, most of it's really stock, and then the rest of the stuff I kind of made up. I'd be like, well, how are they getting that change? How are they doing that? And now it's really progressed so much. There's a guy named Paul Franklin who's probably now one of the best players in the world. He's just an amazing player, and he's, you know, changed a whole lot of pedals, and people are doing the Franklin setup now, and they're doing this. But like I said, I'm not smart enough to start changing what I've been doing for 45 years.
What you're doing is working.
It works well. What type of strings are you using on there?
Well, you know, people ask me that too. I'm actually just use a straight Ernie Balls. I buy them online from Guitar Center, and I found out that if you buy them online, they're less expensive than if you go into the store and buy them. And I'll buy like 2 dozen of each string. I buy separate strings. I don't buy sets.
You know, it's a custom set that you put together.
And I'll buy, you know, 2 dozen at a time of each string, and just send me a big box of strings, and I keep them.
How long do they last?
You know, I was kind of hoping you weren't going to ask that question. goes along with carrying of heavy amps. I change them when they break.
Oh, okay. Well, no, so, I mean, yeah, you don't have the,
You know, if I'm doing like a TV date or something, a lot of times I'll put on, because you want that really bright, ringy sound out of the new strings, especially the wound strings have a really beautiful, ringy tone when they're brand new, and it usually lasts about a week. And then if I'm just doing a lot of live gigs, again, while we're just playing and everybody's crash banging and stuff, I'll just leave the old strings on.
Well, like regular guitar players that are playing, does it take a while to break in the strings?
You know, not really. A day, something like that. And what I do is, because you're constantly stretching the strings, you know, they break in pretty quickly. Like, as an example, my high G sharp, which I pull to an A. So if you can imagine your E string, right? Your E string on your guitar, what gauge do you usually use?
Depends on the guitar, 9 or 10.
Let's say a 10. Okay, so this is a 12 that's tuned up to an A.
Oh, wow.
A fourth above.
And they don't break.
Wow. Well, you know, it's interesting that the 11s break more than the 12s. When I put a 12 on, they're a little bit stronger.
Yeah.
And it's just got a great tone.
Mm-hmm.
But they last quite a long time.
No, that's, yeah, well, it sounds great. I mean, the tone, but I can see what you're saying. But I'm amazed that you don't have to break them in that much.
Right.
That's a problem.
This particular string is doing this. You know, just by on its own. And that's just pedals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's constantly doing that. So it really takes only about a day for these strings to break in. Then they will actually stop stretching after, you know, very short amount of time.
Well, everybody, check out his website is PearlmanMicrophones.com, and check out the mics too, because they're great. They're great. But you can get more information on Dave there. And Lori, thank you so much for. You're the one who introduced me to Dave before.
Yes, and I couldn't even be at the last show because I was away. I was out of town.
And we had a blast there, too, playing the acoustic guitars with his microphones.
There you go.
Anything coming up?
So the show, if you want to see Dave live, he'll be doing a few spots at the eSpot Lounge upstairs from Botello's. It's actually a show that I put together for our tribe. We're doing a Haiti Relief fundraising event, and it's this Sunday evening at 7:30. That is located in Studio City, eSpot Lounge, upstairs from Vitello's. And it's going to be quite a variety of stuff. We want to raise lots of money, and we're going to play our you-know-what's off so that we do.
Right.
Well, that sounds great. Thank you guys both for being on the show. I'm going to leave with the opening, and it's like the first 2 minutes of The Wind Will Rise, and it's really just 100%. I mean, there's the pedal steels in there, but it's just, I would like to label it as 100% taste. It's just really cool stuff.
Well, a lot of that, I gotta say, Gary Stockdale and Greg Prestipino.
Oh, Gary's gonna be on our show this weekend.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, this is their stuff.
Well, it's great. It's great stuff. So this is The Wind Will Rise, and everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week, and thank you guys. Take care.
Now your tears are falling, now your
your heart breathes, but there's a change in the weather coming through the trees. Can't you hear the sound of rustling of the leaves? It's not quite a storm, but it's more than just a breeze. The darkness gives way to the dawn. Nothing stays the same for long. The winds will rise. They will rise. The winds will rise and blow it all away. You may be pushing a rock up a hill so steep. You might be running scared. There's a dog at your heels. The button that says panic. You're on a one-way street, yet you don't know where you're going. I know how that feels. But change is always coming through. Catch that wind before it catches you.